Stay tuned for a message from Facebook after the show.
My relationship with my grandma Helen was unmatched. I was her only granddaughter, and she was always one of the most special women and beautiful, positive forces in my life. She was the one who taught me the importance of journaling and writing everything down, and actually the interview that arguably kicked off my career in journalism was an exclusive with my grandma where I interviewed her about our trip to Disney World. I'm Alexandra Levine. I am a reporter on Politico's tech team and author of Politico's daily newsletter, Morning Tech. I was 9 and I used a TV remote as my prop microphone, but I interviewed her many times after that up until her dementia made it really challenging. My grandmother had lived in New Jersey her whole life, but a couple of years ago moved from an independent living community to an assisted living facility at a nearby nursing home, and she'd been there for about a year when the pandemic hit. And once it did, it wasn't clear to us how long this would go on for or how long we might need to go without seeing her. But once lockdown measures took effect and visitation to the home was suspended indefinitely, there was really no plan for how we could keep in touch with her, how frequently, through what medium. I should also say she had moderate to advanced dementia, so picking up a phone or jumping on Wi-Fi or getting access to a tablet to call us, it was just not something she could do on her own. And of course, that was against the backdrop of what we know was the frightening reality in nursing homes in New Jersey and across the country.
In New Jersey, where 95% of the state's long-term care facilities have coronavirus, a gruesome discovery. Authorities say they found 17 bodies crammed inside a small morgue at the state's largest nursing home.
One day in April, I got a text from my mom in our family chat, and it was one of those messages where you remember where you were and what you were doing. I was actually on deadline writing Politico's Morning Tech newsletter, and it said, "We need to FaceTime Grandma now," in all caps. And just my stomach dropped. I'd been dreading getting a message like that since the pandemic began a month earlier. My grandmother was being transferred to the hospital with what they had thought was COVID. The doctors diagnosed her instead with severe pneumonia. And I fully understood at that point that if I couldn't get her on the phone or FaceTime then, I might never speak to her again, and she might never see her family again. My parents, who are both doctors, were reaching out to friends and to friends of friends on the medical staff there, trying to find someone who could just put a phone to her ear or a screen to her face, just so we could have a final conversation with her, if only for 30 seconds, but we had no luck. So we kept dialing and dialing and dialing her room at the hospital. And almost a day later, a nurse who happened to be by her bedside as the phone was ringing picked it up and passed my grandma the receiver. And we were lucky to very briefly exchange I love yous. And the last thing I told her was, "Promise me you'll get out of there." And she told me, "I promise." And we lost her the next day.
I'm Jeremy Siegel. This is Politico Dispatch. And today, Alexandra Levine on how a lack of communication and technology has left residents of nursing homes in the shadow of the pandemic.
The issue of technology in nursing homes is not new, and this challenge of being able to get in touch or keep in touch was not specific to my grandmother's nursing home either. Part of the reason this is now so difficult for nursing homes across the board is because the industry and government have really not prioritized its adoption. I spoke to an expert up at Harvard Medical School who has studied aging extensively, and he told me the U.S. has long been lagging on tech in nursing homes. What's new now, though, is you've got years of underinvestment in tech colliding with a pandemic of epic proportions. So, of course, nursing homes are now scrambling to keep residents connected with the outside world, and the government is now scrambling to help make that happen. And at this moment in particular, we're in late summer, heading into the fall. This is a pivotal moment to address the issue because we're seeing a resurgence in cases and anticipating a dangerous fall across the country. And those scenarios are already pushing nursing homes to shut down again. So the window to get technology and tools in place for virtual visits is closing fast.
HHS will be distributing an additional $5 billion from the Provider Relief Fund to all nursing homes. Nursing homes in higher risk areas will be receiving more funding.
I know President Trump has talked some about this issue. What sort of efforts from government agencies have there been during the pandemic to help with tech, to help with communication in nursing homes while the people living there can't see their families?
There are federal and state efforts underway to get tech into nursing homes. So in late July, for example, the Trump administration announced $5 billion in new funding from the health department to go in part towards getting tech into the facilities to help residents keep in touch with family.
If they want to be with their loved ones, they can't do it. So what we're doing is we're working it so that we can connect, have them connect with their families.
The problem there, though, according to industry leaders, is that technology is buried in a laundry list of other pressing needs for these places. The most urgent needs for nursing homes continue to be for testing, for staffing, and for personal protective equipment. And half of that pot of $5 billion in government funding has already been earmarked to address those demands. So industry and nursing home leaders really worry about how much of that money is going to go towards technology, which is clearly competing with a lot of priorities that these facilities are relying on, both to keep their lights on and to keep their residents safe.
So where does that leave nursing homes? I mean, I know you've spoken to some of them that have asked for federal help with this. What's been their experience?
Many of the facilities hoping to use government funding for technology have found the process to be a real challenge. Some nursing homes that have been promised tech funding by the government, requests for money that were put in months ago, still have yet to receive it. I spoke to the Holly Heights Nursing Home in Colorado, where the executive director also sits on the Coronavirus Commission that has been tasked by the government with assessing how the nursing home industry has responded to the pandemic. And she told me that they requested back in early June several thousand dollars to go towards technology to get their residents connected, but they've yet to receive it. So they have taken matters into their own hands while they wait, and they have opened their own wallets to buy Apple devices like iPads and wireless noise-canceling headphones, which I was told are, quote, a godsend for residents hard of hearing because the tech is compatible with their hearing aids and has since allowed them to meaningfully connect not only with family members, but also with doctors and clergy.
What do you think your reporting on this and your own experience with not being able to communicate with your grandma tells us about the state of elderly care and the state of technology in nursing homes during the pandemic?
I know that my experience not being able to communicate with my grandmother in her nursing home and then in the hospital before she passed away in the middle of the pandemic was not specific to me. I know it's something that many, many Americans have experienced also firsthand. And it really got me thinking about how far we still have to go, especially in healthcare when it comes to technology and putting technology in the hands of people who don't otherwise have access to it, and also making sure they have the connectivity to be able to use that technology. The pandemic has brought technology front and center for the industry and for long-term care in particular, and this is likely just the beginning. One of the experts I interviewed up at Harvard Medical School shared with me one of his favorite sayings from his line of work, and that was, "There's no reverse gear in healthcare policy." And the idea here is that once people are able to see the benefits of these types of technology and how they can improve lives, quality of life in places like nursing homes and long-term care facilities, it's going to be really challenging to take that away from them.
Alexandra Levine, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thanks so much, Jeremy.
Also today, American Airlines says it'll have to cut 19,000 employees after the end of September, becoming the latest airline to propose massive cuts amid uncertainty over whether Congress will extend federal payroll support. Airlines and their unions have been warning for some time that they may have to cut tens of thousands of jobs when the CARES Act expires at the end of September, but the exact scope hasn't been clear until this week. All told, on October 1st, job cuts could easily top 50,000 across the industry. Delta said earlier this week that it's planning to furlough nearly 2,000 pilots when the aid runs out, and United has warned it may have to reduce its staff by 36,000. There is broad support in Congress for extending help for airlines, but the effort's been stalled by a breakdown in negotiations between the White House and congressional Democrats over a new round of coronavirus relief. And Wisconsin's governor has declared a state of emergency following large protests over the police shooting of a black man in the city of Kenosha. On Sunday, cell phone footage emerged of police officers shooting 29-year-old Jacob Blake multiple times, apparently in the back, sparking renewed demonstrations over racial justice. Just 3 months after the killing of George Floyd by Minneapolis police sparked nationwide protests. Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers issued the emergency declaration on Tuesday and called for protesters to be peaceful, saying the National Guard presence in Kenosha would be doubled from 125 to 250 after several businesses were destroyed and dozens of buildings set on fire during the demonstrations. In his announcement, Evers said, quote, "We cannot allow the cycle of systemic racism and injustice to continue," adding that we also cannot continue going down this path of damage and destruction. Subscribe to Politico Dispatch wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, check out some of our other shows like Politico Energy, Nerdcast, Women Rule, and Pulse Check. I'm Jeremy Siegel. Thanks for listening.
In preparation for the U.S. elections, we've taken critical steps at Facebook to secure our platforms and provide transparency. We've more than tripled our safety and security teams to 35,000 people, implemented five-step ad verification, and launched a new voting information center. Learn more at how we're preparing at fb.com/about/elections. That's fb.com/about/elections.